When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Call his wife and hey, how we doing? 406. McMonagle here with you on this Monday morning. Big weekend of baseball as the Yankees take care of business in Boston. Really, the two teams, it's the difference of, you know, I joked in the open, for it seems like, right, for this entire baseball season, we've been talking about two teams going in opposite directions. Right, to start the year, the Yankees on fire, the Mets, you know, have rock bottom 5 games into the season. Everything else, now, the two teams in opposite directions. Then, of course, the Mets catch fire. Yankees can't do a damn thing right. The Mets pound the Yankees and embarrass them more than any other team has embarrassed them all year, and probably have the most lopsided Subway Series in the history of the Subway Series, Yankee beating up on the Mets included. I don't ever remember the Yankees embarrassing the Mets the way the Mets embarrassed the Yankees. So it's kind of in these two teams in opposite directions. And today that would be too strong. But it was both weekend. The weekend was for both teams about having an opportunity and bouncing back from big performances. And Saturday and Sunday telling a story about how they should handle the trade deadline and how you feel about the team right now. Because the Yankees off Friday night have one of the more disastrous losses of the season. They've had a handful of them. I mean, it's going to be hard for me to beat the fall down in Baltimore. It's going to be tough to have a worse loss than that one. But Friday night was pretty rough because the offense showed up. They scored 7 runs. Judge hit a ball 470 feet in a part of Fenway. I don't ever remember seeing being hit there. They take a 3-run lead in this bullpen with their two best relievers in Weaver and Clay Holmes blow the game. The Red Sox take game one. And then from that moment on, it just felt like that was rock bottom. And how were they going to respond? And yes, the trade deadline was coming. And yes, all the nonsense I've been talking about for a week about, well, you know, Stanton's coming back and Dominguez is coming back. And hell, John Birdie, if you remember him, he's coming back. And they're going to make moves because Cashman doesn't not make moves at the trade deadline. He's going to do something. And obviously he has his Jazz Chisholm as part of the team. But it just felt like, forget all that noise. They can't freaking win. Even when they do what bad teams do, and when they score, they can't pitch. And when they pitch, they can't score. But the same nonsense we've been seeing for a month and a half. And then Saturday, they come back. They score offensively. Verdugo, Torres, obviously Judge and Soto are the constant here. But they score a bunch of runs. They can't pitch. Stroman's terrible. They're down to their last strike. And then that hit from Grisham off the wall kind of changes everything. It ties the game. Extra innings where the Yankees have been terrible. They respond. Gleyber Torres gets a big hit after a sacrifice fly from Wells. And the Yankees win a miraculous game, a wacky game, a crazy game on Saturday. And they needed to stamp it with an important victory yesterday. Because as much as that felt like a game changer, and as, you know, crazy as it was, and you get the word earlier that day that Jazz Chisholm's been traded to the Yankees. So there was some optimism. And it felt good to win that game and to come back and win a game that they haven't won in months and have that heroics at the end of the game and beat Boston and stick it to them and beat Jansen and win that way. It felt good, but ultimately, what is it if they lose on Sunday? They needed to follow it up with a big-time performance, and that's exactly what Rodon gave them. He came through and gave them 6 1/3, 2-run performance where it felt like the game was going to get out of hand, and typically with him, that's the issue. The issue isn't getting the swing and misses. He's been doing that all season. The issue isn't having good stuff. He's kind of had that a lot of the time this year. The issue is when things start rolling in the wrong direction. When adversity hits, he doesn't fight back. And for him to give up back-to-back home runs with a four-run lead, make it 4-2, then give up a triple in the fourth inning, have a runner on third, already two in, back-to-back home runs, another ball off the wall, and to leave Devers there at third and to get out of that inning with a two-run lead and allow that Yankee offense to keep coming at it, that was an enormous moment in this game. It's an enormous moment for the Yankees. And those two wins in Fenway and watching the Yankees offense erupt, whether it be obviously Verdugo at the top of the lineup, which I'm yet to take a call on Aaron Boone and congratulating him for moving Verdugo to the top of the lineup. I'm yet to hear anyone say, wow, what a good job. We're very quick to say how much we hate the lineups we put forth. Now, no one seems to care that he put a guy at leadoff who nobody wanted there, and he went 7-for-14 and was one of the driving forces of them winning these two games. But that's fine. I'm sure you'll come around. Torres, everyone, the offense comes through. They win a comfortable game in Fenway. They take a series, and now it feels like with the trade of Jazz Chisholm, with the addition of Stanton playing in his first game in a month tonight in Philadelphia, with the idea that Brian Cashman is still out there looking for more, you've got hopefully Dominguez coming back soon. He's playing games in minor league baseball. And that vision of the new team, the vision of not the same crap we've seen for the last month, that pipe dream we've been chasing of Stan's coming back and the trade deadline, it is now here. And to have it, the seal of approval stamped by those two performances in Fenway, make you feel real good moving forward. Now, they have a tough three-game set against Philadelphia. After that, the schedule lightens up, and if they could ever figure out a way to take 2 out of 3 in Philadelphia, you'd really feel like the season has turned around. You got Baltimore still struggling. Now, the Red Sox clearly struggling, and the Yankees helped them do it. And it would just feel like a real solidifying, calming couple of days as they head into August and hopefully have a brand new team that can actually score some runs. They still have to work on pitching. They still need a back end of the rotation. They still need a back end of the bullpen. They're looking to still add another infielder. There's still more to do. Brian Cashman still has plenty to do with this team, at least for 2 days. And we'll see how they play in Philadelphia. At least feels like they've kind of moved on from the disaster that was the last month and a half, but we'll see how it goes. And for the Mets, had an opportunity off 2 great wins to start this series, off the miraculous win of Thursday night where they get 3 hits in the entire game. Laureano overruns a ball in right field. Jeff McNeil comes through again with a big hit. They win that game in walk-off fashion against the Braves in game one. That's a game they always lose to the Braves. It's nice to see the other team drop a fly ball. It's nice to come through and beat the Braves in that fashion. Then you follow it up with Senga, his great performance. And then when Senga goes down, from that moment on, really, you could look back, the offense went, I think it was like 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. The rest of the game, it didn't matter because they won and scored runs. And then completely shut down on Sunday offensively. And then, on Saturday offensively. And then yesterday, just opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position in the first 4 innings. And just had this offense that has been the driving force completely shut down for 2 days. And an opportunity to really stick it to the Braves. An opportunity to take at least 3 or 4, possibly sweep a 4-game set after the first 2, and put a stamp on where they are in the standings, put a stamp on who's the better team and which direction the Mets are going and which direction the Braves are going. A real big opportunity to make a statement for the New York Mets, playing some of their best baseball of the year, fell flat the last 2 days at Citi Field with an opportunity against the Braves that they just could not overcome, could not accomplish. And yes, the starting pitching is now an issue. Kodai Senga gone for the rest of the year. I suppose there's a chance he'll be back for the playoffs. I can't imagine that. You've got Peterson and McGill still pitching in this rotation. I mean, look, McGill gave you six innings and 3 runs before being sent out there for the 7th. That's about as much as you're going to get from him and what you would expect from a 5th or 6th starter. Same thing from Peterson. I mean, not terrible, but this is not a quality rotation that you would feel good about heading into a postseason. So as trades are being made, Winker obviously is a good deal. You get an outfielder who's traditionally killed the Mets. He's having a good year. You bring him over here. Hopefully he can help. But the offense has been so good that, yes, it's a nice move. You like it, certainly for the compensation. Seems great. They need to go out and attack this rotation. Because this rotation, without Senga, let's be honest. So, I mean, you miss Senga. He's gone now for the rest of the year. You were able to win at the pace you were winning for the last 2 months without him, it's not a death knell. It's not a devastating blow, but it just reinforces the idea that this rotation, when you have to throw McGill and Peterson out there every fifth day, it's not good enough to make you feel like they are going to be the best wild card team. It's not good enough to make you certain that they could beat anyone in a playoff series. And this offense has shown you enough where I want to give them that opportunity. And I understand that it's a catch 22 and it's a proposition that David Stearns wasn't sure he'd find himself in. But for me, when you have all the signs of a team, minus the last 2 days against Atlanta where the offense couldn't do anything, but you have guys up and down this lineup, whether it be Jeff McNeil now the last 2 weeks, but I mean, you're talking about Iglesias, who's been a career, you know, guy known for his glove, having 1,000 OPS. You got Taylor having the best year of his career. You got Bader having the best year of his career. Hopefully we'll see him soon. Vientos, happily by the fan base, thrilled, sent down to the minors at the start of the year when they signed J.D. Martinez, has now come up and done an incredible job. Up and down this lineup, you are getting guys who are giving you far more than you ever could have thought. They're one of the more dynamic offenses in Major League Baseball. And they need help in the bullpen, and they need help in the rotation. And yes, you know, they could add Static. That's a nice piece. You could add Winker for what you gave up. Makes sense. But over the next couple of days, I don't know if Stearns wants to do it. In fact, I'm pretty sure he doesn't. But will this owner and will the situation force him to give up more prospects than you would have liked, prospects you wouldn't have thought? Other ways, do you have to get creative, take on money? I know it's kind of become a cute little answer over the last couple of days where you got Baez's contract in Detroit. They got a couple starting pitchers, clearly the top of the market in Skubal. Also Flaherty there. Could you take on a bad contract? Can you try and use money the way you did last trade deadline? In that way, you were paying salaries to get better prospects. Now, can you pay salary to give up lesser prospects? Can you figure out a way to help this team in a significant way? Not just guys you hope can bounce back, not guys you see something in, not guys who maybe, listen, a change of scenery type guys. No. Are you willing to go out there and make trades you weren't figuring before the year started? Will you go out and trade for a rental? Will you go out and trade for someone who it's going to take major prospects? Or are you going to just trust this offense, see if you can add something, you know, around the fringes? Get a couple of guys here, guy who's pretty good here, maybe a bullpen arm who's been serviceable in years past, struggling now, or do you go out there and try and really bolster this team and bolster this rotation and set it up so you might have a top three with Severino and Quintana or Manaea and another starting pitcher you bring in who can legitimately give them a chance to win in the postseason? Because I think the team is good enough, and I think they've shown you enough. But that's where we are, is we're a couple days. Tuesday is the trade deadline. Tonight we will see Stanton in Philadelphia. The Mets will take on Minnesota. And for the Yankees, it's about building on what they just did in Fenway. And not letting up against the best team in the National League, the best team in baseball over the course of the season, as they will eventually get it much easier the rest of the way in August. But they have a lot of work, too. And I told you, I was here with Marash on Friday. Brian Cashman is going to be active. Think what you want about Brian Cashman. You want to think he's a terrible GM. You think he's never won anything without the core four. Gene Stick Michael built the team. He rode the coattails. He doesn't have any. 09 is his only championship. It's been this and forever. He sucks. Whatever you think of him. He is going to be active in this deadline. And I told you, Marash told me he was going to sit this one out. He's asleep behind the wheel. All these deals are being made. It's going to be rather underwhelming. Well, right now, they've went out and they added Jazz Chisholm, who is an athletic, extremely dynamic athlete who's had better years than this, but hopefully it can be rejuvenated with a change of scenery, actually playing in front of fans and a packed crowd, and hopefully the atmosphere of a pennant race in Yankee Stadium, where obviously he has a relationship with Jeter, he has a relationship with the hitting coach. And we saw in the game already, he only got one hit, but he could use his speed. He stole third base. He helped manufacture a run, which they did a bunch in this series. A couple of sacrifice flies, a couple of bunts. They actually looked like an offensive team that had options and different weapons. It was amazing to watch. as they scored a ton of runs and had a ton of hits over a three-game set in Fenway and some of the wackier games you've ever seen. But there is more to come. They need bullpen help, and they need probably a piece in the rotation, and there's even some thought they're looking for another infielder, which begs the question, what happens with Gleyber Torres? And for me, I'm hesitant to trade anybody who's having success right now. Gleyber Torres has been hitting, and for me, over the last, since he's been benched the last 3 weeks or so, Gleyber Torres has been an over 300 hitter. He comes through in both of these games with big hits and driving in runs. And it seems easy, right? Oh, you're going to bring in a Jonathan India type. They're still on the market for him. You've already brought in Jazz Chisholm. He can play outfield, but he's really probably better suited as an infielder on this team. And especially with Dominguez coming back and Verdugo hitting. And so it's easy. You trade Gleyber Torres. You get him the hell out of here. Addition by subtraction. You don't have to worry about his terrible defense or his terrible base running, which was still on display in this game. How the hell he didn't score from nobody out, second and third. Gleyber Torres at second base, and a line drive off the pitcher's ass that rolls away for 5 feet, and he's standing at third base. It's amazing, this guy. This guy still manages to bother me, even as I'm telling you I don't want to trade him. He drives me freaking nuts. But right now, I don't want to move anyone who's going to give me any kind of offense. I don't care about what are you going to get back for Gleyber Torres? I'd rather have a solid bench. Now, we'll see what happens because there's only so many roster spots. You got Torres coming back. Excuse me, Stanton coming back. Dominguez is probably going to be here at some point in the next week or so. And they're still looking to make more trades. But Brian Cashman is not going to sit it out. Brian Cashman is not asleep behind the wheel. Brian Cashman is making moves. They might all be wrong. They might all fail. They might all be just awful, and we're screaming about another failed deadline from Brian Cashman. That is plausible. Not telling you every move he makes is going to be successful, but he's not going to just sit this out. And he's already started, and we'll see now that, you know, Jazz is going to go to a ballpark and play against a team he's more familiar with than Fenway and the Red Sox, and hopefully he can get find his footing. It sounds like they're going to hit him in the middle of the order as opposed to where I thought they'd probably start him at the top of the order with this team needing a leadoff hitter, but Verdugo has done that. 7-for-14 in this series. This Yankee offense has exploded. It actually looks like a lineup because we talked about, and we knew it, especially against the Mets series, right? The first game of the Mets series, you had Jones and J.D. Davis hitting leadoff and cleanup. And, I mean, it was an embarrassment, right? Yankee fans wanted to revoke their fandom. Everybody wanted to turn in their fan card. You were embarrassed. You couldn't show your face with 1-4 like that. And it's clearly been a problem. They have the lowest OPS from the cleanup spot in all of baseball, but it seems like Wells has established that. And honestly, right now, certainly against right-handed pitching, Verdugo at the top of the order, I mean, that was a game changer in this series. He was lacing balls the other way all series long. He was 7-for-14 in the series. Glaber's hitting. Wells is hitting. Obviously, Judge and Soto. And Judge, that home run. I mean, have you ever seen a ball hit there in Fenway? I have never seen a ball hit that far above the bleachers in center field and right underneath the scoreboard. I have never seen that. He gets on base six times in the Saturday game. There's nothing, you know how good Soto and Judge are. It's everybody else, right? It's the Yankees have two good hitters. Well, in this series in Boston, they had a hell of a lot more than that. We'll see if that continues into Philadelphia. So that's where we are on this Monday morning. A lot of baseball. We have all week to get to the football. Camps are open. Daniel Jones is throwing passes. People are catching them. It's crazy. You should see it. I saw at least two or three wide receivers catch balls from footage of Giants camp. I can't believe it. So we'll have plenty of time to get into that, as well as the Jets and everything else going on there. But we're going to start with some baseball here on a Monday morning as a pivotal weekend just took place. And the trade deadline is now a day away. And both teams need to bolster their runs through the playoffs because both teams are good enough.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 4:30, McMonagle here with you. I got you for another half hour. The warm-up show will come your way. 888-808-1019. I've actually watched a little more of the Olympics than I typically do because for whatever reason, my wife is into it, and she pretty much was just like, I don't get to watch anything. You control the TV. You come home. You watch games. I have nothing. I want to watch the Olympics. I'm like, okay, I guess we'll watch the Olympics. So we spent the other night watching the Olympics. Obviously, the opening ceremonies were a sight to behold. That's for sure. It was a little out there. We were talking about it the other day with Marash before I saw all of it, but we saw Marie Antoinette with her head in her hands. That was just a lot of it. The water, it was odd. And then, of course, all of it. Very weird. But I've seen a lot of I saw a lot of the high bar. I've seen a lot of the gymnastics. I saw water polo. I've watched like a ton of it. I don't know why she loves it so much. I mean, the Olympics are interesting. I like some of the sports. I like some of the different stuff. I told Marash I agree too. I'm more of a Winter Olympic guy. I still like the skating better. Figure skating is still like, that's when I think Olympics, I think figure skating for some reason. I paid zero attention to the basketball. I know, I guess Kevin Durant had a great game last night. I'm more focused on some of the unique stuff about the Olympics. I don't understand the horse riding either. I got to be honest. Like, I understand, like, when I'm seeing equestrian, right? I guess that's what they call it. I have no idea.
Yeah, equestrian.
There you go. When I see them, like, hopping over things and running around the track, and like, it just feels like, won't the best horse win? Like, when I watch that, I'm like, okay. Now, I'm not saying that the person riding the horse has no say over what's going on or doesn't take any skill or any. I'm sure it does. Timing, the pullback on the reins just right. I don't know. But it just feels like it's just going to be the best horse out there. Does the horse win the gold medal? No, the rider wins the gold medal. But it just feels like, you know, it's almost like it's a race. The best horses are going to win. Now, jockey can blow it or do something special and make a nice move. No doubt, jockeys are important, and these riders are important. But still, it just feels like I'm watching. I'm like, okay, well, the best jumping horse is going to win, right? I don't know. Just, it seems like a weird one.
I watch gymnastics, and it's great and all, but I just don't understand the scoring.
No, I know.
Like, how do they judge it?
I know. And I don't know why I'm watching so much. But, oh, that landing, oh, that was with his second hop was within a foot. That's only a tenth of a point. I'm like, okay. That's only a tenth of a point. Now, you see, if his hop went over a foot, that's a third of a point, which would be a real disaster. Oh, okay. And then I felt bad for, what was his name? Brody Malone. They did this whole feature on him. He had this devastating injury where he had a misstep or landed bad at some event a couple of years ago and completely tore apart his knee. He's got pins and you know, all kinds of metal in his knee, and he's working his way back. They showed him on the farm with his father, did the whole piece on him, and he's doing the high bar, I guess, and he's one of the favorites to win the high bar, and like within a half a second, he fell. And I don't know if I've ever seen, I don't watch it enough, I don't know if I've ever seen someone just like fall off the high, like slip. He went for a move up in the air, came down, just missed it by half. They spent like a half hour. And the other thing about the Olympics that I'm watching them, the commercials are like, it's never ending. It's like you watch one person do one event. It takes them, sometimes it's just like a jump and then that's it. And they'll go to a break. A lot of commercials in the Olympics. That's what I've noticed. But the swimming, I saw the men rally team won a gold medal. But I don't know. I get more up for the winter games. I like the skating better. I like the skiing better. I'm not that much of a Summer Olympics guy. Even I guess maybe I'll check out the surfing. That sounds like maybe something I'd be into. I saw ping pong.
Oh, that's so great.
Ping pong's great. The other thing with ping, there's like not many volleys, though. Like usually it's within one or two swings someone's had a great shot or messed up.
You mean rallies?
What'd I say? Volleys, yeah. Rallies, yeah, whatever. Volley. It's like a
volley. Volley is when you hit it before it hits the table.
Oh, there's a term. I'm just thinking a volley, like, you know, back and forth is a volley to me.
No, that's a rally.
That's a rally?
Yeah.
Even like in tennis?
Like in tennis. Yeah.
Tennis, it's a volley. Is it back and forth? No, it's a rally back and forth?
No, volleys are when, like, you know, like you hit it up high in the air and you, before it hits the ground. You
yeah.
That's a volley.
A volley isn't back and forth.
No, that's a rally.
Are you sure?
I play tennis, yeah.
I always thought that's a good volley. No one says that? No, that was a good volley.
It's a good rally.
I don't know. I think you're mistaken. I'm sure you've played tennis and all, but I got to be honest with you. It's a good volley, volleying back and forth. Even like with an argument, right? Oh, yeah. That's like we had a, you know, you volleyed back and forth. I feel like I maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. We got to bring an expert in here.
But if for winter sports,
yes.
If you ever want to have a good laugh,
mm-hmm.
just look up on YouTube, skiing Oh the Frenchman, and you'll have a good laugh.
Skiing Oh the Frenchman?
Yeah.
The
basically
the,
they're like
did the Oh Frenchman fall?
No, it well kind of yeah, but the way the announcer says it is hilarious. The commentary is okay. What makes it.
The commentary is what makes it. That's
and,
what we
and
said.
And also, you can hear when they fall or what happens to the skier. I don't want to say it because I don't want to spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can hear their reaction as well.
Right.
And it's hilarious.
All right, I'll check it out when I have a free moment. Oh, the Frenchman. See if what comes up. Pretty sure it's volley. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Call me. We can volley back and forth. And like we talked about, the Yankees lineup is going to change, but and Stanton's back in the lineup today. He's going to have no rehab game, so we know what's going to happen. I don't expect Stanton to be good for a little bit. It's going to take him some time to get his swings together. We're going to see sliders in the dirt in the other batter's box with enormous, ugly swings, and that's why I think they should keep. I want to keep Wells at cleanup. I don't want to mess around. I don't want to mess around. They're seeing some good pitching. Wells has been on fire. Honestly, Wells the cleanup hitter. I don't care where you hit Stanton, but maybe fifth or sixth. It's going to take some time. There's just, they need him in it. I'm glad. I don't want him to have rehab games. I don't think the rehab games help at all. It's not like he's had a bunch of rehab games and then comes back and is on fire. It's going to take major league at bats against major league pitching for him to figure it out. It's going to take some time. But I still want right the thing that's turned this team around in those two games has been the offense and has been partly Wells in the cleanup spot. And we'll see, you know, what other additions they make to this offense. I'll be curious because it sounds like everyone's still expecting them to go out and get another infielder, which to me, I would love it because they need as many bats as they can get. But it's time. It's just it's going to be a crowded house, and I would be. I mean, I guess they're going to trade Gleyber if they add another infielder. I don't know how they do it without trading Gleyber. I would keep him on the bench. I would DFA DJ LeMahieu. I said that the other day. I want to do that just to send a message to this team that you can't perform like this. And I love DJ, but it's just at the time, right? His role is a backup defensive first baseman late in innings. Like that's there is no role for DJ LeMahieu right now. And especially with the addition of Jazz, like there's nothing for him to do. And I know he makes $15 million, and I know he's going to make $15 million next year. You have to go out and provide and present the best possible roster. And that includes Oswaldo Cabrera. And for me, that still includes Gleyber Torres, and it's going to include Jazz Chisholm, and it's going to include whoever else they trade for. It does not include DJ LeMahieu. 888-808-1019. Brett in Long Island wants to talk a little Daniel Jones. What's up, Brett?
Just quickly, it is rally. That's I know it doesn't sound right, but it's mm-hmm. rally. That he's right. But I'll tell you the one thing he's wrong. I got your back. What he said, you know, when you hit the ball high and you hit it, that's not a volley. That's an overhead. Like if the ball's lobbed up in the air and that's,
right,
that's
I got
an
you. I don't think he just meant if you hit it before it bounces.
It's before you hit it, before it hits the ground.
That's fine. It doesn't matter. Volley means back and forth.
That's where it is. If it's high though, that's an overhead though. It's a tie. That shot's called.
That's okay. It's a volley back and forth.
Chris, man, yes. it's I can't take it anymore. It's petty. It's not just Daniel. It's not just Daniel Jones. They showed JJ. Did you see that one? Where he threw a pick in training camp? and it's all over social media.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. His career's over. Daniel Jones misses the wide over receiver. I know it looked terrible.
Yeah, but yeah, he missed the screen pass.
The narrative?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard me yesterday. I actually agree with you on this. If you heard me on Friday. The idea that video of, like, oh, Daniel Jones in midseason form with a video of him overthrowing a screen pass. Like, come on. It's ridiculous. It's so stupid.
But it does tell you the hatred I'm sorry. It does tell you the hatred, though, for certain quarterbacks, right? I'm sure there's a lot of quarterbacks missing plays, but that tells me, wow, like, the pulse of the people out there. Like, I had five people send me that Daniel Jones video. Five people. And I'm already getting angry before the season. I'm angry about it.
Because they know you're a Daniel Jones, guy. But, listen, he's built this own narrative himself, all right? He played poorly last year. He's hurt all the time. He's got to overcome all this. This is part of what he's got to overcome. Now, do I think it's ridiculous to look at one play? But they've been showing other ones, too. He got a big deep ball to Hyatt. He had a big play to Neighbors. I mean, they've shown some of the positives, but the negatives are going to be harped on because more people... I mean, it's year six, and we're still unsure about the guy. Like, this is what you have to understand, Brett.
I don't know what
This is what you seem to not understand.
I could name 10 quarterbacks, Chris, starting from Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence. I can name, that's just the beginning. I can name so many quarterbacks they don't go after, right? But for some reason, it's Daniel. And I've been in other groups just to see what's going on. I don't know what it is with Daniel Jones. The guy was in the playoffs. I don't care how. I look at the Jets, they haven't been in playoffs in 13 years. Aaron Rodgers got hurt at the four plays, and they're praising him in training camp, making nice passes.
He's won four MVPs.
I don't know why.
He's one of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game. That's why.
That's not debatable. We know that already.
Well, then what are you talking about?
But now he's old. Because he's older. I know you feel the same way. You don't think there's any questions in your mind. Hey, is Aaron Rodgers done? Like, I wonder right now, is he going to come out and be the older? You think he's going to be what? A top what? I want to see what you think. Top five, top 10,
yeah,
top what?
Certainly top 10. If he plays and he's healthy, top 10 quarterback, easy.
Well, no. Being healthy too is part of it. Because
he could get hurt.
Is he going to be healthy? I think there's questions. Yeah.
He, of course, there are questions. Okay. He didn't finish the season last year. He could get hurt. If he's healthy, he's gonna play a top five, top six quarterback level. Easy.
And I guess Daniel Jones never said a word. Daniel Jones, you watch his whole career, whatever, 6 years. He never said one word. This is what compels me to root for the guy. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
he never says a word. Huh. Never said anything about the line. Never, ever, one time. There's not one quote of the guy saying something off color. Nothing. Right. Even when they threatened getting another quarterback, the only thing he said, hey, I'm not, I don't like it or whatever exactly he said, but I understand it's business. So he's done everything perfectly. And the guy still gets destroyed. Yeah, and you know it's not just him, Chris.
No, I know, but I don't know about he gets destroyed. He hasn't played well, plain and simple. You could do Eli Manning never said a crossword either. He won two Super Bowls. I mean, it's about playing.
He was him out of town.
Right. And then on his third year, he won a Super Bowl. Or his fourth year, he won a Super Bowl. This is year six for Daniel Jones. And last year was
his first year with Dable. He got to the divisional round. I'm just saying. Like,
I understand.
I understand Zach Wilson got what he got, but he didn't do anything.
Correct.
Zach Wilson. I get that. But I don't get Daniel Jones.
Zach Wilson.
I really don't, Chris.
Yeah, because he hasn't done anything. He can't stay healthy. They don't score points. He hasn't scored points.
I'll say this last thing, because you've asked me a couple of times.
Yeah.
If I'm saying it now. If Daniel Jones doesn't finish the season, he gets hurt, doesn't play up to par, what we feel is up to par, what I feel is up to par, I'm ready to move on. But like I said, I wanted the last chance, because everybody's confusing what he did, by the way. The six-year thing is not relevant, by the way.
No?
That's not an argument. Okay. Because the last year he played the season, he got to the playoffs, that's the contract. He only played like six or seven games on a new contract.
Right.
You have to wait. That's what the contract was built on. Contract now.
Yeah, forget the contract. This is year six of him being the Giants quarterback. He got $40 million, and we still don't know if he's the guy. We're still at the point where we're watching on Hard Knocks the team desperately try to trade up to get rid of him, to replace him. And this is year six. That's what I'm saying.
You were wrong. Yeah, you were wrong on that.
How was I wrong on that?
Well, they didn't, though. You keep talking
because
about
it. Because they couldn't.
They did it. They
because you saw
him
the
again.
Phone call.
Okay.
Right. Let's be fair now. they tried to move heaven and earth to get another quarterback. All right, they couldn't do it, but they tried desperately to get another quarterback in here. We all know it. We saw it.
Doesn't mean they would have played anyway. Even if they got him, it doesn't mean anything.
No, he was going to. No, Daniel Jones.
A lot of teams got another quarterback, and he's still going to get one more chance. Oh. That's all I'm saying to you. No. Look at the teams. A lot of teams got the rookie quarterback.
Yes, you're right.
I still think he was getting another chance.
Daniel Jones would have played this season no matter who they drafted. You're 100% right. Daniel Jones was going to start this year. Daniel Jones was going to start this year and then never play for the Giants again. The future of Daniel, there would have been no Giant future with Daniel Jones past this season. I'm still not sure there is, but if they drafted him, for sure. But I'm not talking about the contract. I'm not talking about anything. I'm talking about this is year six of a quarterback. They just paid him big time money, and we're still asking questions, and we're still at the point where at the draft they tried to move up. We're still wondering what Daniel Jones is, what he can be, whether he's the guy. It's year six. Forget the contract. How often do you pay someone $40 million and a year later be like, well, we got to find out? They paid him and we still got to find out. I'm tired of trying to find out. They just paid Tua, right? Do you think the Dolphins, he's their guy, whether they like him or not. And maybe in a couple of years they'll try and get out of the contract, but there's no more questions. Tua's the guy. Now, the only question is, will he be good enough to justify it? But they're not going to look to trade up. This is him. And yet the Giants have no idea who Daniel Jones is. 6 years in, no idea. Oh, just kidding. He's never had this. He's never had that. We got to find out. It's year six. That's not irrelevant. It's very relevant because most of the time, quarterbacks hit in the first 2 years or they're called busts. The guy's been able to make it through because everything else around the team has been crap. He's been able to avoid the bust call. And the idea that he had one good year, and again, not many points, not many touchdown passes, not many passing yards, just he didn't turn the ball over and they managed to win some games and he had a great playoff game and that got him a contract. And now here we are 2 years later trying to figure out how we can move up to get rid of him and then if he plays well enough to justify the rest of the contract. Like, here we are. Same crap. But sure, wonder why. Wonder why people are down on him. I can't figure it out either.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:54, just a few more minutes before the warm-up show comes your way. 888-808-1019. Big start tonight for Luis Gil. And the New York Yankees trying to make that series in Boston stick. Great Zach Wheeler on the mound for Philadelphia. Obviously a great starting rotation for Philadelphia. It's been a huge positive for them, one of the reasons why they have the best record in Major League Baseball. And it'll be a good test for this lineup that had awoken in Boston. Verdugo, I would think Verdugo would still be your leadoff hitter against the right-handed Wheeler. Stanton in the lineup, probably a tough matchup for him. Hopefully Wells still in the cleanup spot. Oswaldo Cabrera, Torres, we'll see what Jazz Chisholm can do against the team he's a little bit more familiar with, having played with Miami in the NL East. So, big start, big game for the New York Yankees. Richie in Queens, what's up, Richie?
Hey, C-Mac, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, that was obviously a breath of fresh air last night for Rodon.
Oh my God! You know, just that whole series, the crazy nature of those games in Fenway. Those games in Fenway are so much fun, so nerve wracking. At any moment, someone could put up 5-6 runs. Balls bounce around all over the place. There, it's a wacky place. Saturday in particular was just a crazy game, and the best win of the year by far. And to see them score runs, I mean, they scored what, 7, 11, and like they scored every night. They were scoring, you know, big runs in the series. It felt really good.
It felt like where did that come from? Do you attribute that to being in Boston? Boston's pitching is fairly horrible.
26 runs in three. Yeah, no, they gave up 20 to Colorado before they faced the Yankees. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, So still, the fact is they did score runs. I just don't get, you know, the Chisholm. I mean, I know he's there, but I'm trying to figure out where you put him. You know, he's left.
Well, they're going to get him. They're going to let him play third base a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. That's where you would hope that he could fit in, because that's their big need, but he's never really been.
No, he's never played third base.
Played the hot corner.
No.
But I, you know, but you would think, C-Mac, that they think that he could be, that
I would
kind
think
of an
so.
Answer
look,
there.
He's very good defensively at second base. He's transitioned to the outfield. He's not as good an outfielder as he is an infielder. I would think that he's the kind of guy who can figure out how to play third base. I don't see the big difference. Like, I know the responsibilities are different, and the ball might get to you a little bit quicker. You need a slightly better arm from third base than second base, but still. I mean, I don't think any of the tools are an issue to play third base. So I would think, I know he hasn't played third base in his career, but I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, and if you can do that, and then obviously get an arm, get another bullpen arm, get Cortez back, because Cortez is killing you. I mean, he's got to go more than 4 2/3.
Yeah.
And real quick with the Mets, I know I was talking to Tommy yesterday, and I know their enthusiasm, and I know they got there without Senga. But Senga was like, you know, in the second half, you make real big adjustments. You say, okay, now we've got that extra piece. Losing him, enthusiasm takes you so far. That's a big, big loss.
No, I mean, listen,
they don't have a number one.
That is the
take care, Z-Mac.
You got it, buddy. They do not have a number one, and recovering from that injury, don't downplay it. You're right. There is the way to look at it. Like, hey, he hasn't been here all year, and we've been on fire for the last 2 months. One of the hotter teams in all of baseball without him. So how could you say we need him? We've been playing as good a baseball as we played in forever without him. But at the same time, having him come back, having him perform like that, and then watching him hurt, they have to overcome it. It's been followed by two losses. Now, the pitching wasn't great, but ultimately this team is going to sink or swim with the offense, and the offense was the reason for the loss. Certainly got shut down on Saturday and couldn't come up with a big hit. Had plenty of opportunities on Sunday, but couldn't get it done. The offense I still believe in, but this pitching staff, they don't have an ace. You're right. And that's a big blow. And it's actually ironic to think. Now, again, it's only been two games for the Mets, so I don't want to jump to conclusions here. I still believe in them, and I still want them to go attack at the deadline. But it's funny just to think that, you know, Cole came back, and it kind of, the Yankee staff was unbelievable without him. And since he's come back, it's been a disaster. And to have Senga come back, have that moment where he pitches great, you win that game, he leaves with the calf injury, you find out it's a year-long thing, we'll see him next year. And now the next two games, now be it McGill and Peterson, but they don't pitch very well, they don't score some runs, and suddenly having him back almost feels like a detriment because of the pain it caused to watch him leave. But they need help in the rotation. They need help in the back end of the bullpen, and I hope they're aggressive. Winker is a good pickup. He's having a good year. He'll help them. He's better than the other options they have as a fourth outfielder. But Stewart and Ben Gamel. But it's not enough as a difference maker. And I'm hoping they're still out there looking for difference makers, even if it costs them more than they hoped. All right, that's it for me. Warm-up show is next. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Alex, on the other side. I'll catch you tomorrow, 2 a.m. Yankees and Phils, Mets and Twins. Catch you tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.